Welcome to the Gut Church Podcast. My name is Kennedy Shear, and thank you so much for joining us. Today, we have a great word for you. If this ministry has changed your life, will you let us know? Send us an email to story@gutschurch.com.
I want to talk about, my sermon is called Not My Time. Not My Time. And I'm talking about a story from John 2. It's Jesus' first miracle. And this is one of my favorite stories in the Bible. I feel like I get to preach in GYC every week, which is awesome. And I feel like I say that a lot. I mean, this is my favorite story. This is one of my favorite stories. But really, really, this is truly is one of my favorite stories in the Bible. And I think the Lord just kind of blew this up for me one day when I was reading it and just continues to reveal this story to me and kind of what happens here, because it's a little bit of a weird miracle. We'll talk about it. It's Jesus turning water into wine, and we see Jesus in the Word, and he's opening blind eyes and deaf ears and you know, making the lame walk and raising the dead and doing all these crazy things. But the first time we're introduced to the miracle working power, he takes some jars of water and he turns them into wine, and it's just a little bit weird. And I'm a question asker. Like, I want to know the bottom line, right? Like, I was that kid in school, the kid you didn't want in your class. And so I just began to ask God questions as I was reading this in John 2. And I think he showed me some really cool stuff. And I'd like to share that with you tonight. So John 2, verses 1 through 5. Let's get into it. It says, the next day, there was a wedding celebration in the village of Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there. And Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the celebration. So obviously we know these are probably family, friends, the people they were close to. It says the wine supply ran out during the festivities. And so Jesus' mother told him, Jesus, they have no more wine. And Jesus responds and says, dear woman, that's not our problem. My time has not yet come. Or I interpret it as that, man, it's not my time. My time has not yet come. But his mother told the servants, do whatever he tells you. This is cool because in these days, wedding celebrations lasted for a long period of time. It wasn't just like an evening. It was like a week-long deal, and they partied, and they drank wine, and they ate, and they celebrated the family, and everyone from the town came, and all of their close friends came, and it was a really cool thing. I mean, it was a big deal to get married, and it was really a disgrace to run out of wine. I mean, it was a sign of poverty. It's like, how would you not have enough to provide for the people around you? How would you not have enough to provide for your town and your family? This is something where you wanted to throw the best party, right? You wanted to throw the best wedding. And so for them to run out of wine, it's a big deal. And Mary's like, Jesus, we don't want them to be disgraced. We don't want them to be embarrassed, man. Let's take care of this for them. And I think it's funny that Jesus says, man, mom, it's not my time. My time has not yet come. And we don't really know why he said that. The Bible doesn't really explain. There's not like a scholar or a theologian that can explain exactly why Jesus said it's not my time. Was it prophetic? Was he saying like, you know, I don't know that my time has come for my glory to be revealed? Or was it just him saying, mom, I don't know if I'm ready. Like, I'm 30 years old. I know I have disciples. These guys are following me. I'm teaching and stuff. But I don't know that I'm ready to step out and do this thing, because if I do this, it changes everything. And we're going to see that in a moment, that what Jesus did, his act of obedience, because if you know the story, you know he did go ahead and do what his mom asked him to do. He took care of the wine situation. And Jesus' act of obedience changed everything. And that's what I want to look at tonight, is that one act of obedience. I think a lot of times that we can feel that, let's just say for a moment, that maybe Jesus was saying, I don't know that I'm ready to step into this thing. Because that's how I read it, and that's how I related it to my life. Because I think a lot of times, being in ministry, trying to my best to fulfill the call of God on my life, I think there's been many moments in my life where I've stepped into something and I'm like, God, I don't know if I'm ready to do this. I don't know if I'm ready to move my family from Missouri to Tulsa and to work for this new church, this big church. I don't know if I'm ready to step into this internship or step into Bible school or step away from my old habits. There's been many, many things in my life where I'm like, I don't know that I'm ready to do this. Has anybody ever felt like that, or is that just me? You just feel like, man, I don't know if I'm ready. But what I love about this story between Jesus and Mary is Mary's response. She doesn't even respond to what Jesus said. Jesus says that, and she literally, like, in my head, and thinking about my mom, she probably didn't even look away from him. She's like, hey, Jesus, we need more wine. And he's like, woman, why are you asking me? My time's not ready. And I feel like the servants are there, and she just looks at Jesus and is like, just do whatever he says. And he gave the look. Like, any mom in here knows the look, right? It's like, she's looking at Jesus like, you're going to take care of this. Whether you like it or not, this is your time. This is your deal. You're going to take care of it. I know the mom look. My wife does a great mom look. My boys know it. Our kids know it. Everyone knows that look. And I just imagine Mary looking at Jesus like, no, it is your time. You're going to step out and you're going to do this thing. She's watched him develop. She's watched him teach in the synagogue. She's watched these men begin to follow Jesus. And I think Mary maybe sees something that Jesus maybe didn't. And she's like, no, Jesus, you're going to step into it. You're going to do it. And the servants were ready. I think it's funny that the servants were ready as well. And they were obedient as well. Because Mary walked away and they're like, I don't know if you saw that look, but whatever you say, we're ready to roll because I'm definitely not going against her, right? And she's like, listen, I'm 30 years old. I'm old enough to know she meant that. So grab those jars. Let's get after it. We're going to make something happen. And that's exactly what they did. I want to point out here, this was an act of faith from Mary. And I think that we can learn something from Mary's attitude and posture towards Jesus in this moment because Mary didn't know what Jesus was going to do. She didn't tell him, hey, I need you to grab some water and turn it into wine, or hey, I need you to run to the local winery, whatever it was then, and grab some wine. She had no clue what Jesus was going to do, but she trusted Jesus to do the right thing. And I think that's very cool. When we come to a situation in our life where we're like, God, I'm not sure what to do here, and I'm not even sure what you're going to do here, but I'm going to trust you because I believe that you're going to do the right thing. I believe that if I trust you, you are going to make this thing right, even though I don't see how it's going to be made right. Even though I don't see what this looks like, I trust you, God. Jesus, I trust you. I trust that whatever you're going to do is going to be better than whatever I'm thinking of. And that's why I'm going to come to you and not try to do this on my own. I trust you, Jesus. And then I think that when we see the servants begin to do exactly what he said, we see that they felt that same amount of trust in Jesus. Like, you know what? Let's just do it. Maybe if this sounds really weird, we're grabbing these pots, it sounds really weird, but let's just go ahead and do it because I trust that whatever he's saying is going to work. Man, we need to trust that what God is going to do in our lives is going to work. We need to trust that if we will put our faith and our hope in God, that whatever he has planned for us is going to work better than anything we could plan for ourselves. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. I think that you can look in the Word and see many, many, many women and men of God that took steps of faith in obedience, even though they didn't know everything that was going to happen, even though they didn't know every single step along the way, because this is an act of faith for Jesus too. Jesus is stepping out and he's like, listen, I don't know that I'm ready, but I'm going to be obedient. I'm going to be faithful. If you're going to ask me to do it, I'm going to do it. I don't know what this looks like, but I'm going to step out. I'm going to be faithful. It's an act of faith for him too, even though he didn't quite understand why am I doing this right now? It's not my time. Mom, you don't understand the repercussions this has on my life. You don't understand what this changes for me. If people figure out who I am right now, do you know what this changes, Mom? But you know what? I'm going to be faithful. I want you to know something. God cares more. I want to get this dead on. I want to get this right. God cares more about your full obedience than he does your complete understanding. God cares more about your full obedience than he does your complete understanding. You look in the Word and you see Abraham. God says, Abraham, I want you to leave and go to the place that I'll show you. Abraham says, God, I don't understand, but I'm going to go. I'm going to do it. Moses, I need you to lead my people out. God, I don't see how this thing happens. I don't speak well. I'm not your guy. But you know what? If you said it, I'll do it. I'll trust you. Esther, I need you to go before the king, and I need you to free your people. Esther's like, you know what? I don't think you realize this may cost my life. But if you tell me to do it, I'll do it. I'll be obedient, even though I don't understand. Man, God wants you to be obedient. And I believe that in this story, in this moment, Jesus' obedience leads to an incredible miracle. I think that Jesus was able to do that miracle because he was sure of something that Pastor Bill tells us all the time. We don't live by how we feel. In that moment, he felt like this is not my time. He felt like, I don't know if I'm ready to step out, but he knew, I don't live by how I feel. I'm just going to take a step. How many times has Pastor Bill told us, all it takes is this. All it takes is one step. And if you'll step in, if you'll be obedient, if you'll take that step of faith, watch what God will do with your life. And I'm jumping ahead of myself. I want to get to the end of this story because it's so incredible what God does. But I want to talk for a moment about being out of your comfort zone. I'm a comfort zone guy. Like, I'm outgoing. I like to talk to people, but I also like to stay in my zone. I like to stay in my lane. I like to do what I know how to do well. I don't love to step out. I love to try new things, but only if I'm comfortable with them. You know what I'm saying? And as a parent, I realize that I can put that on my kids sometimes, that I can begin to only push them as far as I want to push them. And I can begin to only ask them to do what I'm comfortable asking them to do. And thank God for my wife, because my wife is constantly, we talked about relationships last month with our, or this month, currently we're talking about relationships, which is what Keen is talking about tonight, with our GYC students. And I said, you know, the number one thing that attracted me to Heather, of course, is the fact that she's absolutely stunning. She's beautiful. When we got together, she likes to call me chubby cute. I don't really know what to call it. I was 65 pounds heavier, so I was definitely chubby cute then. But she's out of my league now. She was way out of my league then. And so, of course, yes, she's beautiful. But the number one thing that attracted me to my wife is that she challenged me. She challenged me. She wouldn't allow me to stay the way that I was. She asked me questions. Why do you do it that way? What are you doing? And at first, I'm like, whoa. Like, I don't know if you have the right to ask me that. I started to get offended. And like, well, do you not trust me? She's like, no, I trust you. I just want to make sure that you're doing it the right way. I just want to make sure that you're growing. I want to make sure that you're challenging yourself. She has challenged me from the day that we met. And I love that about her. And I love that she also challenges our children. She challenges our kids every single day to get better, to step out of their comfort zones. And I have a little video that we're going to show here in a moment of her challenging our middle son, Israel. We have three kids. Jericho is 6, Israel is 4, and Noah is 15 months old, our little girl. And girls are great. I'm glad I had two boys before, but girls, we love girl babies as well. I'm glad I have the boys to protect her, because I don't have to worry about guys. I got two little boys to worry about the guys. So, but man, what I love about my wife is that she constantly pushes them out of their comfort zone. And I think it's a very healthy place to be. And so I want to preface this video with that, but go ahead and roll the video. They're going down a slide, by the way, if you can't tell where they're at.
I told you it's not scary. Good job. Sometimes you just gotta suck it up and go, buddy.
Again.
So, if you couldn't hear him, that's at one of our favorite places in town called Pumpkin Town, 61st and Garnett. It's a big slide at Pumpkin Town. Our 6-year-old loves it. He goes down it constantly. Izzy wanted to be like his brother, and so he's like, Mom, I wanna go too. Will you go with me? She's like, of course. So they go to the top, and I mean, like, his legs fell out from under him. He's like, there's no way I'm going down. Anybody ever, like, been bold and then realized you were a little too bold? That was Israel, okay? He's like, Mom, I'm ready to go. Nope, not going down that slide. Like, is there a smaller slide that I can still enjoy the moment but not have to go down this one? And there wasn't. That was the only slide. So she's like, listen, we're going down the slide. You're doing it. If you didn't see me in the background, I'm the one that pushed them down the slide. So we wanted to make sure that we challenged him in that moment. But what I love about that is he was so terrified. And the great thing is Heather knew what was on the other side of that slide for him. Heather knew the joy he was going to feel going down that slide. Heather knew how great that moment was going to be for him, but he couldn't see past the depth of the slide. He couldn't see past how scary that moment looked. But because she was able to push him, and because he was, you know, obedient enough to sit on her lap while we pushed him down, he was able to experience something that he never would have experienced had he not stepped out of his comfort zone. His moment, his greatest moment of fear became his greatest moment of victory, all because he was obedient enough. That's probably a bad example for us to push him down the slide. God's not going to push you where you're at, but he was obedient enough to sit on her lap as we shoved him down the giant slide, and he loved it. And guess what? That very thing that he was like, literally crippled in fear, like fell to his knees, wouldn't go down. She had to peel him off the ground to put him on her lap. The thing that crippled him, he was running after now. He's again. He couldn't wait to go again. And then he wants to go by himself. And then he wants to go. Now every time we drive by it, he's like, Mom, the slide. He's so excited. He's so excited to run after that thing. Why? Because that door blew wide open as soon as he was obedient enough to say, I'm not going to live by how I feel. I'm not going to live by fear. I'm going to take this step. And we as parents were able to see that moment and say, no, it's better if you do. I promise you it's better if you step out in obedience. I promise it's better if you'll just do what we ask. I know you don't understand why I say don't touch the pan when it comes out of the oven. Jericho, our six-year-old, is the thinker. He is Heather. He's not me. Izzy is me. He just run up and do whatever, whenever, except the slide. He's usually a pretty wild kid. Jericho is the type of kid where I will open the fridge, grab something, turn around, set it down, and he's closing the fridge like, Dad, I don't know if you realize you left the fridge open. Like, he is his mother's son. But the other day, I pulled some hot cookies out of the oven, and I'm like, Izzy, don't touch, buddy. This pan is hot. And I said, and Jericho's just excited. He comes running, he's like, oh, cookies, and touches the hot pan. He will never go near the oven again. I promise you that. Why? He learned his lesson because he touched the pan. All he could see was the cookies. And it's like, Jericho, hey, come here. That's why I tell you not to go near the oven. That's why I tell you not to touch the pan. All this time, you thought I was just being mean. All this time, you thought I was just, being whatever. Listen, it's because I care about you. I put boundaries on you because I care about you. I push you out of your comfort zone because I care about you. Can I tell you, God is the same way with us? Man, God wants to push you. He wants you to step into something new. He wants you to do something great for him. But it's going to take a little bit of uncomfortableness. And it's going to take a little bit of us stepping out of our comfort zone in order to do that. But obedience will lead us to incredible things. I want you to know that this year, Pastor Bill has been talking about us stepping into, he says, man, I hear the sound of abundance. He wants this year to be a year of abundance, a year of deliverance, a year of revival for us. I promise you, abundance flows out of obedience. When Jesus was obedient in the story, and we're gonna read the end of the story in just a moment, because Jesus was obedient, he was able to step into an abundance in his life. And everyone around him, everyone that was there with him, got to experience the abundance that Jesus walked in. Because of his one act of obedience, this entire wedding was blessed because of it. All of his disciples were blessed. His mom was blessed. All of these people, there was an incredible effect to his obedience. There was an abundant effect to it. When we are obedient, we step into deliverance. I mean, your deliverance might just be one act of obedience away. And as we are living a life of deliverance and a life flowing with abundance, let me tell you, that's revival. That's where we see revival in our church. That's where we see revival in our lives and revival in our marriage and revival with our children is when we are living those abundant, incredible, and delivered lives that all flows out of obedience. Can I tell you guys, we are standing in a house built on the obedience of Pastor Bill and Sandy. For 30 years, they've just said yes. What do they always say? Man, our answer is yes. Pastor came to Pastor Bill and said, listen, I think your vision's too big for here. I think you need to go do your own thing. He said, okay, I'll go do my own thing. We'll call it guts. We'll do, okay, that's fine. I'll step out. I'll do it. I'm not afraid. I'll take that step of faith. Man, stop sending your people here to be trained. I think you should train your own people. Okay, we'll train our own people. Fine, we'll start Second Mile. We'll start the internship. And look what he's built out of that obedience. You and I are reaping the abundance of Pastor Bill and Sandy's obedience right now. We're standing in a house built on obedience. And I'm so grateful for that. Let's finish this story up. In verse 6, it says this. Now there were set there 6 water pots of stone, according to the manner of purification of the Jews. I want to come back to that. That's really important. It says, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. Jesus said to them, fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast. And they took it. When the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water out knew. I love that John tells us that. He's saying, listen, he didn't know where it came from, but the servants do. Why? Because the servants were acting in obedience too. They got to see kind of behind the wall, behind the curtain of this miracle because they knew what was going on. Said, even though they knew, because they had drawn the water, said the master of the feast called to the bridegroom and he said to them, every man at the beginning sets out the good wine. And when the guests are well drunk, then they set out the inferior. But they have kept the good wine until now. The beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee, and this was the beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee, and it manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. I want to go back to what the master of the feast said. He said, every man sets out the good wine first, and then once it runs out, then they go to the bad wine. But you have brought out the good wine last. Isn't it funny that a lot of times we wait until we've exhausted every single option to turn to God? We wait until we've let every well run dry until we'll go to the wellspring of life. Like, let's not allow our decision to trust God to be last. Let's go to God first. I used to have a Honda Accord, loved that thing, called it the Batmobile. It was a little black car. It was so cool. I got my first car. It was a truck. I wrecked it in a parking lot like a month after I got it. That's a story for another time. Literally ran into a light pole, just wasn't looking. It's a good one. I'll tell you guys next time. But so I got this Honda Accord. I loved this car. I put like 130,000 miles on this car driving from St. Louis to Tulsa. And I had it all through high school, all through college. Had it up until literally the week before Heather and I were engaged, and I'm driving it down the highway, and all of a sudden my RPM shoot up and then drop down and shoot up and drop, like something's going on. I call my buddy who is a Honda master tech. Literally, there's nothing about Hondas that he does not know. He runs a shop here in town, Ian's, and I called him. I said, Jake, listen, my Honda's freaking out. Like, my car's freaking out. I have this car forever. I love it. What is going on? And I explained to him what's going on in my car. And he's like, what year is your Honda? And I told him. He said, how many miles are on it? And I told him. He said, is it this engine? I said, yep. He said, man, your transmission's blown. And I was like, I don't know. I did some research, and I heard that there's this little sensor you can change, and maybe that's the case. People have seen that. And he goes, no, don't change the sensor. It's terrible. It's going to take you forever. Don't change the sensor. Your transmission is blown. Take your car home. Do not drive it. Either sell it to somebody who can fix it or fix it yourself. And, I mean, this always happens with those. I promise you, I've seen it a million times. Your transmission is blown. So I get up the phone. I go by the sensors. I go to my father-in-law's house, who's an incredible with cars. And we spend literally the entire day taking the top of my engine off, changing out these sensors, like breaking our arm to get down in there. I am not a mechanic. I am not a handyman. I'm learning slowly from my father-in-law. And so we fix this thing up. We get it going. I take off, and I'm like, what does Jake know? Like, this thing's driving great. 5 miles down the road, transmission explodes. My car won't run. Had to get it towed back to my house. I called Jake, and I'm like, Jake, I wish I would have listened to you in the first place. I exhausted all my options when I just should have listened to the master at the very beginning. Had I listened to the master, I never would have gone through all that trouble. Had I listened to the master, I never would have wasted all that time. Had I listened to the master, I never would have spent all that money. I never would have had to get my car towed. He was trying to save me from so much, but I was so arrogant and stupid and clinging to something that I loved. I didn't want to give it up yet. I didn't want to take on that new task. I didn't want to spend the money for a new car. I didn't want to step out in faith and do something great. I knew I was about to buy a ring for my future wife. I didn't want to buy a car in the same week, which I did, which was terrible. I was like, okay, can I get like a 30-year mortgage on this car? Because I've got to buy a ring this week too. And I mean, they go pretty far now. I don't know if y'all know that, but I think we paid that car off like a year ago. And but no, I because I didn't listen to the master in the very beginning, man, it took me so much more time. It took me so much more money. It took me so much more pain. Let's not allow God to be our last option. Let's turn to God first and say, God, I trust you. God, I trust that whatever you're going to do is going to be great. And now, can I show you really quick why this is one of my favorite stories? I'm going to get a little nerdy, okay? I'm a little bit of a Bible nerd. I love to, like I said, I'm a question asker. I love to kind of figure stuff out. And this is why this is one of my favorite stories, because it talks about Jesus revealing his glory. And I'm like, revealing it? Like, he turned water into wine. Yes, that's cool. Yes, it's a miracle. But how in the world is this him revealing his glory? Like, I would think, like, Lazarus coming out and taking off the grave clothes. Like, that's revealing some glory, right? Like, blind eyes opening, dude in chains, being healed. Like, that's revealing some glory. Let me show you why they said that, though. In those days, you were unclean just by living everyday life. It was a Jewish thing, very ceremonial thing. And so when you came into a wedding or a feast or you were going to eat, there were these big jars that you had to wash yourself in. You had to wash your hands. You had to take your feet off and wash your feet. And it talks about that in this story. It says the jars for ceremonial washing is what Jesus used to fill back up and to fill with wine. He turned it into wine, right? I think it's very cool to look at this because literally this is something that they had to do at every meal. And it brought them from being unclean to being clean. This water that they had to wash themselves in every time. And it was exhausting. It was work. It was like the curse, right? Like, they have to do this every single time. And they couldn't eat bacon, which is terrible, but that's not a part of this story. But they're still, this is unclean for them. And so they're constantly washing themselves and thinking about, what did I touch? Do I need to go wash again before I eat? And it's exhausting. And I love that Jesus, in one moment, takes away the option for them to clean themselves. And he takes this water that was used to cleanse them, that was used to make them right, that was used to give them a place at the table. And he says, you know what? I'm going to take this water. I'm going to turn it into wine. And if we look at wine in this story, man, it's a time of celebration. It's a time to just celebrate with the people around you and celebrate this wedding that's going on. He said, listen, I don't need you to worry about making yourself clean. I just need you to celebrate what I'm doing right now. I just need you to celebrate in this moment. And the wine, if we look at really the end of the story, when Jesus is sitting at dinner with his disciples and he picks up the cup and he says, man, this wine is my blood. This is redemption for you. Drink this. This is how you really get clean. You don't need to worry about the water and the jars. You don't need to worry about doing anything for yourself. You don't need to worry about making yourself righteous. If you will trust me, I will make you truly clean. If you will drink of this cup, I will set you free. If you will take this one step of obedience, this one act of faith, I will blow this thing wide open for you. I will work a miracle in your life, just like I did at the wedding, just like I did at the dinner, just like I did with Lazarus, just like I did with every single person that ever took that step of faith, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, the one step to say, God, I trust you. God, I don't know what you're going to do, but I believe you're going to do the right thing. God, I don't know how this thing works out, but I believe it's going to work out. I believe that if I will trust you with my life, if I will trust you with my situation, if I will trust you with my marriage and with my children, I believe that you will do the right thing. I believe that this thing will end up the way, and I don't have to do it myself. I don't have to wash myself clean. I don't have to continually work for this thing. I can trust you, and you're going to blow this thing wide open for me. You're going to work a miracle in my life, and you're going to make your glory known in my life. And I'm going to get to see the glory of the Son of Jesus. Isn't it an incredible honor for us to be able to reveal the glory of Jesus? Well, guess where that starts? With an act of obedience. One act of obedience, stepping out saying, man, God, I trust you. And here we go. Now we get to reveal the glory of the Son, just like that moment did. And I love that even to the cross, Jesus was obedient when he didn't exactly know what was coming next. Or maybe he didn't feel ready for what was coming next. The statement that started Jesus's work in the ministry was, woman, it's not my time. And then what does he do? He says, but you know what? I'll do it. The statement that finishes Jesus's life and ministry is, God, I don't want to do this. If there's any other way, please make that way happen. But not my will, yours be done. The thing that he told his mother to start his ministry on earth is the same thing that he told his father to finish his life on earth. And he said, God, I trust you. And I don't know if it's the right time. I don't know if it's the right thing. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know if I'm ready for this, but I trust you. And I trust that if I'll take this one act of obedience, you'll let me live a life of abundance, and you'll deliver me, and you'll set me free, and I can live in revival, and I can live the most incredible life ever because I know who my God is, and I trust you. Will you take that step tonight? Whatever that thing is, we all have something, right? Whatever that thing is in your life that you say, I don't know if I can let this thing go. I don't know if I can let that Honda go. I don't know if I can step. I don't know if I can forgive that person, God. I don't know if I can take the reins off of that thing, God. I don't know if I can quit this job and step into whatever you're calling me to do, God. I don't know. Let's just say, God, I trust you. Not my will, but your will be done. God, even though I feel like maybe it's not my time, I'm gonna be obedient. I'm gonna step into what you're calling me to do. Why would we do this? Man, God's thoughts are higher than our thoughts. His ways are higher than our ways. He's the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He sees the beginning from the end. God sees it all. And he says, listen, I see where you're at. I see where you've been. And I see where you're headed. Will you trust me? Will you trust that I'm going to do the right thing with you? Will you trust that I'm going to lead you in the right direction? Man, we can trust God tonight. In 2 Peter 1:3, I'm going to go through some, I'm closing with this right here. This is some of my favorite verses in the whole Bible. It says, by his divine power, God has given us everything we need for living a godly life. We have received all this by coming to know him, the one who called us to himself by means of his marvelous glory and excellence. Man, God has given us this power. He has given us everything that we need to fulfill the call of God in our lives if we would just be obedient and step out and do it. In Philippians 4:19, it says, my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. And my last verse here is Philippians 2:13. It says, for God is working in you, giving you not only the desire, but the power to do what pleases him. If you've got a desire that pleases God, please know that's from God. And please know that if you have that desire, God's already given you the power to fulfill that thing. That stepping out in obedience and stepping out in faith, you can step out knowing, trusting God, you've given me everything I need. You've given me the power that I need to conquer this thing. You've given me the power that I need to win every single day, because that's the authority I walk in. Why? Because of your son, Jesus. Because I saw him do it, and now I can do it. Because I saw it work for him, and I know that it's going to work for me. Man, Jesus was obedient to the cross. Can we be obedient in our lives today and watch what God wants to do? Watch the miracle that he wants to work. You have everything you need to step out in faith.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you'd like more information about the ministries of Guts Church, visit our website at gutschurch.com.